Welcome to another episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. So if you're just joining us for the first time on this podcast, this week's episode is actually a continuation of the previous episode that we published. Myself and Dave and Kyle from the LaFleur content team had a discussion about some of the major content marketing trends that are kind of shaking things up in 2017 in our world. And as often happens when the three of us get together, things, you know, got pretty in-depth and we went long. We had some fun. And so what we decided to do is break that episode into two parts. And so if you haven't checked out the first part of this two-part series, I'd really urge you to go back and check that episode out. If you did follow along last time, you'll know that we broke down three of the major content marketing trends that we kind of picked out in the previous discussion. And the issues that we talked about last time were video / visual marketing, mobile friendliness, and influencer marketing. So in this week's episode, we're going to continue on and we're going to break down three more major trends. And we're going to talk about, you know, do these trends matter for law firms? And if so, how can law firms make the best use of them to increase their marketing ROI? So we're going to get started in just a second and jump back into that discussion. First, just a quick reminder. If you're not familiar with LaFleur, we're a full-service legal marketing partner that works with law firms across the country to deliver holistic, data-driven solutions that grow their businesses. If you want to learn more about us and check out our many other resources, including blog articles, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of other in-depth content, just visit our website. We're at LaFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. Okay. Let's jump in now and wrap up our discussion on the state of content marketing 2017 on Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, so moving on, next trend that I kind of picked out is personalization of your marketing content. And just a statistic to lead us into this one. A recent study from Marketing Profs reported that businesses that personalize web experiences see an average 19% increase in sales. Another statistic to follow that up, this is from Experian, the credit rating company. They found that personalized marketing emails receive a 29% higher open rate and a 41% higher click-through rate than compared to non-personalized emails. So I think this is something that's becoming more and more common. You probably just notice now, as you browse the web, just as a consumer, you're getting more and more stuff. You know, the stuff that comes to your email is, you know, it's not just, hello, it's, hey, Steven, you know, we found these products that we thought you might like. You know, your experience kind of follows you from website to website through things like remarketing and display ads. So the web in general is just becoming smarter. Companies are using data to market to people on more of a one-on-one kind of basis rather than just treating people as, you know, throwing out a mass message to a crowd. And so this is the way that marketing is going in general. And I think it's, you know, it's very important for law firms. Like most of these trends, we probably don't see it as much among law firms, but it's definitely something that we try to bring, especially through like email marketing, you know, that comes to mind. We try to bring to every client that we work with. So yeah, to you guys, you know, what does personalization of marketing materials mean? I mean, I know we all know this is important because we do it at work, but it involves also more than just plugging someone's name into a field, right? So what does it mean to you guys?
Totally agree that it's more than just plugging someone's name in. I mean, you can capture people's data and personalize their the messaging. So yeah, it addresses them by name. It maybe addresses them by the type of whatever other contact data that you captured in a form. But it's also about delivering relevant messages. And I think about, I have kind of a funny story about this one recently. So I bought my wife a shirt. We were out shopping and she didn't want to get it at the time. She really liked it, but didn't want to get it. She was feeling guilty. And so I ended up like just ordering it while I was in the store, like on my phone to have it delivered. And I could get 15% off if I gave him my email. So I said, okay, sure. Yeah. All right. 15% off. Give him my email. And then I get these messages from this women's clothing company to sent to me, you know, so totally irrelevant marketing. Right.
Yep.
You know, but I got my 15% off coupon and so it all worked out all right. You know, but that's the kind of thing too that you need to know. You need to be able to do more than just personalize something, but you need to also be able to deliver relevant messaging to people. Because personalized and irrelevant messaging is just as ineffective as not personalized messaging.
Definitely.
I would chime in there, especially in the legal field. One thing to be cautious of, though, when you're talking about personalization, is the amount of information or the degree or the topical information that that you could potentially be sharing. Because as we know, you know, a lot of people have shared computers. Some people have shared email addresses. Some people even have shared, like, Facebook accounts.
Right.
So let's envision a scenario where perhaps a married couple, one of them isn't necessarily very happy, and whether they plan on executing it or not, they've gone to see an attorney about potential separation. Well, if you are going to be receiving remarketing advertisements then on your web browser, you know, maybe that person's significant other sees that, and then obviously you have a situation that is not desirable for any party. So there's a security issue here to an extent. I will not deny the importance of personalization at all, but it needs to be done tactfully, very carefully. And any, you know, for any lawyers out there who are working with a marketing firm, this is an important question to ask, you know, because at first, you know, the idea of personalization can seem very appealing and very attractive because it is. But given the delicate nature of law and legal industry, you'll want to shore up those efforts to make sure that everyone is safe and secure.
Yeah, I would add to that, in fact, that the tools that we have at our disposal for personalization are incredibly powerful now. You know, if someone gives you your name and their email or gives you their name and their phone number, we can cross-reference that with, say, LinkedIn profiles or public social media, and we can pull in more information than what they gave us, which is kind of, on some levels, very creepy.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah, and so you want to be very careful about the degree that you personalize something, because you don't want to give them that weird feeling that you have that information. Like, I think a lot of us don't realize how much information there is about us that's publicly mm-hmm. available. And so even if we do submit only our name and our email address, if those things are cross-referenced and can be pulled from, say, LinkedIn or other social media that's public, there's a hazard there, I think, right in line with what Kyle's talking about, where we could go too far with personalization and sort of like show our hand in a creepy way.
Yeah. And I think a lot of companies kind of do that with impunity, but I think people have they need more trust. I think we kind of assume – I assume like soft drink companies are just kind of out to get me, you know, like they're just out to take advantage of me. And, or, you know, if I buy a bag of chips, like I don't really think the chips company is looking out for my best interest. I just want them anyway, you know, but I think for law firms, I think, yeah, people have a little bit higher expectation. They're going to need a little bit more trust if they're going to become an actual client. So I think that's a great point. You know, you need to talk with your marketing partner, talk through those issues, you know, figure out what works for your firm. And, you know, what degree of personalization is acceptable without compromising, obviously, the attorney-client privilege and relationship, which is totally important and sacrosanct.
Yeah. And piggybacking on Kyle's, yeah, to tie messaging and personalization together, that, like, you don't want to go too far with messaging that's too personalized because it could, in fact, you know, compromise somebody's trust in you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So overall, personalization as a trend, what do we rate it? 1 to 10.
I'm gonna give it a 6 because I think it's a trend that's already been in motion for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give it a very cautious 6.5 again, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where I was gonna go with it too, about a 6. And yeah, it needs to be approached with caution, but you know, it's definitely something to consider because it's becoming, you know, the way of the world in terms of marketing. Moving on, just got a couple more points here that I had brought up. One of the last two is the main trend we want to talk about here is niche-specific content. And this kind of has to do with just the overall amount of content being generated online. And, you know, we've kind of talked about this before. It's just one of those things that really starts to boggle the mind when you think about the sheer amount of content that is being generated every day. And it's something as content creators that we think about all the time because, you know, anytime we're writing an article that seems like, well, we've done this before, it's like, okay, if we've done this before, like how many people have done this before? You know, how are we going to differentiate this content from this ever amassing pool of stuff that really doesn't go away? I mean, some things get dated, but in general, you're up against an enormous amount of content that's being generated, and it's hard to make things unique and stand out, right? So one of the answers to that in terms of, you know, that content marketers have identified is making your content more niche specific and making it more focused. So, you know, a lot of the topics that we've kind of seen done a lot of times for attorney blogs, you know, the kind of, you know, here's the five steps you take after a car accident. Those are pretty constant among attorney blogs, and it's unlikely that I think you're going to have anything really new to bring to a topic like that. Sometimes there is a value for it, you know, in terms of someone who's browsing within your site may want to find that specific information once they're already there, but it's not the kind of thing that's really going to bring much traffic to your site if you're not already ranking, you know? It's so hard to be number one for something like that because so many people have done it already. So just an example, you know, a kind of different way to spin a topic like that is, you know, look at, you know, what's a more niche scenario that you could talk about. So for instance, like one thing I came up with, you know, instead of five things to do after a car accident, you know, maybe you talk about five things to do after your Uber or Lyft crashes, you know, that ties into, you know, the kind of rise of the ride sharing trend. And even though it's a much more focused scenario, you know, it's one that fewer people are probably gonna be searching for, you're more likely to rank for it, right? It's the whole idea of this long tail search. You know, you may not be having as many people look for that, but you're more likely to find those people when they do, right? So for me, I think the takeaway for this trend is maybe that, you know, attorneys just need to, in terms of the content on their website and especially on their blogs, you know, when coming up with niche content, I think the way to make it effective and authentic is to just draw from your own experience, you know, and draw from the cases you've had. I mean, the one unique thing you really bring to marketing as an attorney is, you know, your clients, your experience, the stories you have and the things you've done. So, you know, draw from those and figure out, you know, what have clients asked me about? What issues do I see that kind of keep recurring in my practice that people want to know about, you know? Even us, you know, as a legal marketing agency, that's kind of something I stress to clients. You know, the one thing that we can't replace in a marketing sense and can't really, you know, do without is your expertise as an attorney and the experiences you had. So for me, that's kind of and how I think a law firm should act on this trend toward niche-specific content. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I definitely can't overstate that idea that attorneys should use what they know. You know, their experience is invaluable. The issues their clients have faced, the issues that they've struggled with themselves even, or the cases that they've dealt with that had weird or unique kind of angles. You know, maybe it was a typical car accident case, but it was made a lot worse because of a defective car part of some kind. Maybe it was a typical car case, but there was a, you know, kind of weird thing that the other driver did, or there was a weird circumstance. Go ahead and write about those, because chances are good that somebody else has experienced that as well. And if nothing else, it's going to highlight your expertise in that area rather than just being very generalist.
Yeah, I would say, you know, on the paid search side of things, we would generally refer to this as like long tail keyword. And I know we do an organic as well, but I think specificity is a really great thing, especially for smaller firms or firms whose digital marketing is still kind of maybe more in its infancy. It's going to be really hard to, and Dave can probably speak to this even better than I can, but it's going to be really hard to generate any sort of real authority within Google or Bing or whichever browser you're targeting. If you're a new firm and you have an article like, you know, five things to do after a car accident, or I've been in a car accident, what do I do? I mean, that's such a broad topic, and there are literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of law firms throughout the U.S. Going after those same sort of keywords. So
yeah.
I think specificity is super important. It might feel a little taxing at times, but the payoff is definitely going to be worth it. And again, it's going to position you as a thought leader who's willing to go more in depth, more detailed with these sort of items, which should result in, you know, people giving your firm a call because all of a sudden they trust you are the authority on this specific item.
Precisely.
Yeah. So like that one person, you know, you may only connect with, you know, a few people through this topic, but they're going to be more likely to have an interest in your specific practice area. They're more likely to contact you, more likely to convert. It's more valuable traffic, even if it's not more quantity of traffic. And it may be more quantity of traffic too, because you're not going to rank for the more generic topics. So you're not getting traffic that way.
Well, and we've seen this in practice where we've done this for clients where we chase after a hot topic, you know, that's in the news. You know, there was like that plane crash a while back, and one of our personal injury attorneys, you know, they'd done plane crash cases in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, and we chase after that news article, and it gets a ton of views. It gets 5,000 visits on their site. It does really well, but zero people fill out a form. You know, it's a 95% bounce rate or something. And then you've got topic X that's been around for the same amount of time, published about the same time. It's more of an evergreen, but more niche and specific topic, mm-hmm. and it may only get 20 views, but it got three form completions.
Right.
So, which page do you want? Do you want the page that's got 5,000 views but no conversions, or do you want the page that's got 50 views and 5 conversions? You always want the better quality traffic, and it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around that, because you think, oh, I want all these people on my website, but you don't. You want the people who really need your help on your website and reaching out to you to get that help.
Right. And just to wrap up on this topic too, we kind of talked about how lawyers can draw from their own experiences to come up with these kind of topics. But of course, we're a data-driven marketing firm. That's, kind of one of the things we pride ourselves on and brand ourselves on. And so, you always want to bring in some data to this approach when you can. So a great way to do that, I think, is keyword research, right? We haven't really talked about how to do that on this podcast, but maybe we will in a future episode. But there's lots of guides you can use on the web, or, when you work with a marketing partner like us, we do this for all our clients when we start with them and as part of our initial content ideation. But, you just use keyword research to find out what people are actually searching for. And you can come up with things that, I can think of a recent client where it's not something we ever talked about with them, but we found out that there was a decent volume of search around whiplash injury claims. So that ended up being, a kind of a niche topic on their blog. And we knew that there were people already looking for that out there. It's not just even educated guess. We've got data to show that there's, potential traffic from this. So I think that's a way to bring in the data-driven side into the niche-specific content trend. Okay, so let's rate this one as we have with the others. Niche-specific content, importance, 1 to 10.
I give it a 9 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 9 too. I think it's just, again, with the glut of content that's out there, the incredible amount, you've got to find a niche audience that you can connect with in a lot of cases. Especially like we talked about, the legal marketing world is so competitive and, so many firms are churning out content, for the purpose of attracting traffic. So I think it's critical. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I also think it's critical. I'd give it 8, 8.5, only because, relatively speaking, I'm not sure it's quite on the level of video or mobile responsiveness. I think this is definitely something that every firm should be using, just to varying degrees. Even if this means you're only putting out a niche-specific blog or video maybe once a month, that's still better than nothing. And, Stephen, like you kind of said, your conversion rate is going to be much, much higher for that given topic. So it's definitely important, maybe just not quite on the level of video or mobile responsivity.
Definitely. Okay, moving on. I got one last trend to talk about before we wrap up here. And the trend is, it was titled, as I came across it, Email Renaissance. And in the context, I'll just give you a statistic to kind of frame it. At the Washington Post, apparently a lot of newspapers are, I've been kind of cognizant of this for a while, a lot of newspapers are really finding this to be a way to connect with some of the audience that they've lost, over the past several years. So at the Washington Post, they now have 75 different e-newsletters that they send out to their readers. And the New York Times, they have 12 full-time staffers dedicated to email newsletters. That's insane. At a paper, both papers don't even have 12 full-time staffers anymore. The New York Times has that just working on their email newsletters. And, I've personally had experience with that because at some point I went through and kind of personally customized my whole experience in the New York Times. And they do have just for every area of coverage they've had, they have email newsletters for morning and evening news, anything you want. It's an incredibly personalized experience and an incredibly rich one. And I was surprised at how robust it is, but this is, kind of a trend that, a lot of these content outlets are hitting on. Just one more statistic too, to kind of add to that. A recent study from the Content Marketing Institute found that content marketers rated email as the most important channel for content marketing. So 91% of the marketers surveyed rated it 4 or 5 out of 5 on a 1 to 5 importance scale. What do you guys think? What are you seeing about email marketing and what we're doing with it that's different that makes it important, especially now?
Yeah, I think it's another vital component. This one is probably going to rank pretty high for me, as I'm sure it will for both of you. Again, I would just stress that if you're going to really engage in some sort of email marketing campaign, automation campaign, whatever your lead nurturing process is going to look like, anything worth doing is worth doing right. So while 91% of marketers say that it's a very important thing to do, and I would definitely agree with that, It's also kind of pointless to do if you're not going to do it right and follow certain best practices, of which you can definitely find several pieces on our blog that are kind of dedicated to best practices for email marketing. Headlines are so important, you know. Brevity is the soul of wit, right? So that those concise copy pieces are what's really going to draw on your audience. Having video in your email, having testimonials in your email, staying on topic, personalization, which we already discussed, you know, within reason and within, you know, secure measures, super important. So it's a great way to get the word out. It's a great way to follow up from, let's say, a paid search campaign or a social media campaign or whatever it might be. You know, the great thing is you can offer an infographic or a white paper or, I don't know, a piece of swag, some golf balls, who knows, right? but then you can also follow up and let them know, hey, we're going to be sending you emails that are also related to this topic. So they're getting a lot more benefit out of that. And then obviously, you know, you're going to keep your firm right at the forefront of their minds, keep you on the tip of their tongue. And if and when they need your help, that's, you know, you're who's going to come to mind.
Yeah, I think email's an interesting one because email can serve a lot of different purposes. I think email can be a primary marketing tactic when you're talking about those sort of personalized drip campaigns based on people specifically reaching out to learn more about a specific issue. So maybe they download an ebook and then you send them 10 or 12 more emails about that same topic that they download their ebook on. In that case, email marketing is probably more of a primary marketing tactic. But most of the time, email is a secondary tactic. You have to have the content, you have to have the assets in place to then promote them via email. So, you know, your newsletter example is a really good one. The Washington Post has 75 different e-newsletters, but they have to, all those e-newsletters link to content on their right. website, right? And Kyle's examples as well, right? Where like, okay, if someone wants to download it in an infographic or you want to populate it with video, you have to have the infographics, you have to have the video, mm-hmm. you have to have the content there already. And then email kind of puts the gas on those efforts and allows you to reach your audience much more in a much more targeted way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That's actually why I kind of put this topic last, because I think it ties into a lot of things we've been talking about. I think it ties into personalization because, you know, the reason they have 75 different e-newsletters is because it's not a one-size-fits-all they've discovered, you know. Different people want to see different content. So they kind of curate their content for different audiences and you pick out, you know, the things that they know that those audiences will respond to. And going along with that, you know, like you said, you've got to have great content. So the niche specific content that people are going to respond to, you're going to get better mileage out of that content in an email newsletter, just like you would on the web. And as you said too, you know, video, photos, anything like this, you've got to create that content first. But once you do, in particular, I think maybe the takeaway is that for law firms, you know, even though you have to have a lot of other things in place that email marketing builds on, you need to take it seriously as its own advertising medium too, that's very powerful. So, you know, maybe when you talk about your email newsletters, think about different audience segments. You know, you're not going to want to use the same email newsletter for your press contacts or for other lawyers as you are for your prospective or current clients, right? So you need to think about, you know, tailoring that experience, personalizing that we talked about, and having your audience segmented out so you can make every email communication effective, personalized, and kind of a one-on-one experience for that person. Okay, so let's wrap this one up. What do you guys think the email marketing renaissance, importance of this trend, 1 to 10 for law firms?
I'm going to give this one a 10 as well, because I think the effort is so minimal after you've already got those foundational assets that you're going to add 15% effort and you're going to get 500 times the results on your investment. So I'm going to give email marketing a 10.
That's a great point. I was going to give it a 9, but now I kind of want to give it a 10 too. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I got to give it a 10 as well. It just goes along so well with so many other marketing initiatives, and it's just such a wonderful way to stay, you know, in front of people's, you know, at the forefront of their concerns and interests. So definitely a 10.
All right. Well, we went on a high note then. 10s all around. Okay, we got to get this podcast wrapped up. We've been, you know, going on for quite a while, and it's been great. But we don't want to go too long, so we'll always leave them, you know, want more for next time, right?
There's plenty more to talk about.
Yep, always more to talk about.
Definitely.
Okay, so we got to wrap up now, but thank you guys so much. Kyle, we always love having you, and we hope to have you again back on the podcast soon now that we got our new remote setup. Hope you had a good time on this one.
Yeah, it's a riot. Always fun to talk to you guys.
Yeah, you too. And Dave, as always, thanks for coming in with us.
Yeah, no problem. It was a blast.
Okay, that's it for our two-part discussion on the state of content marketing 2017. But we hope you enjoyed diving into those issues as much as we did. And you should definitely not forget to check back for our next episode on September 14th. That episode is going to be our second episode featuring a remote guest on the show. We're going to have Tim Mackey from Vista Consulting out of Louisiana to talk to us about how law firms can gather better data and make their businesses more efficient. And then we're also going to talk about how law firms can use some of that data and bring it into their marketing efforts to make those more effective as well. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for this podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. Okay, that's all for this week, but we hope we'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.